Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, this is Zach Birch. Welcome to AnCast. Back on the show, returning champion. Really happy to have this guy back. He's co-founder, president of Right Stuff, rightstuffanime.com. Just launched an exciting new Kickstarter for Emma, a Victorian romance. Sean Kleckner. Sean, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. Always good to talk with you, Zach.
How's it been?
Everything's been great. We're into fall, which of course means Christmas.
Right.
We always start Christmas here in August,
right?
But so it's keeping us busy, and it's been a great year, and lots of stuff that's happening over here that's been positive. So very pleased with how things are right now.
So the last time we were talking, it was sort of in the wake of your Aria Kickstarter, which was a big success. Obviously, it's kind of an overwhelming success. When we were talking last time, like, it hadn't finished yet. And, like, in the intervening months, you have not only, like, the first season is in people's hands right now, right?
Yes.
Right. So, tell us, like, starting from then, like, how did production go on Aria?
Well, I mean, to your point, the Kickstarter for Aria was well beyond any expectations of anybody here whatsoever. I mean, I had no doubt whatsoever that we would get the first season, but when it went from there and up and up and up and up and have the ability to do all of the seasons of the show with all of these stretch goals, and it was phenomenal, just amazing to see the fan response for it. And we kicked right into production. We had the first season adapting about the time that the Kickstarter finished. And have been working through all the dubbing and adaptation and so on. We do have the first season that's completed and it's shipped to everybody. The second season, the first part is pretty much done. So that one I assume will probably be shipping pretty soon. And then, you know, we just continue. We're going to continue to blow through that until it's all completed. So, I think that the rewards that we generated were really neat. We had a lot of fan input on how we would make those rewards and submit them over to Japan, and that is one of the more difficult pieces of any project to get approvals. But I think everything worked out really well, and I'm very, very pleased with how our production staff worked on that. The dub is absolutely fantastic, in my opinion. I don't think that we could have asked for anything better than how that's come out so far.
So was the production process on this, like, you'd never done a Kickstarter quite like this before. Was the production process on it different? Was it more hectic, or was it pretty much the same, except the funding was different?
Well, I mean, we'd never done a Kickstarter of our own before.
Right.
We've done fulfillment and setting up things for other people's Kickstarters. But this was our first one of doing our own. And it had been a while since we'd done a dub project. So there was kind of this, ramp up in terms of reacquainting ourselves with all the pieces that needed to be taken care of.
Sure.
Getting the things together to get over to the dub house and the casting and so on that, like I said, we haven't done for a while. I don't want to say it was any more hectic. More than anything else, it was more just collecting all the material that needed to be taken care of, because we wanted to have everything in order to do the work to get the casting and so on done. And the big change, obviously, on this particular project was the addition of the upscaling and being able to get all the approvals required for us to do that, because it had already been upscaled in Japan and we were going to do our own versus using theirs. So, and I'm also very, very pleased with how that came out. I think our production people did a fantastic job on that.
Right. And so, like, this kind of comes on the heels of other companies doing this Kickstarter thing and having, I would say, less success with it. What would you like? Do you, when you look back at those other projects now, like, and kind of the way that they went, do you feel like you have a full understanding now of, like, how it went wrong for them, and, like, what did you do differently? I guess, because you didn't seem to run into any speed bumps.
Well, I'm sure we had some speed bumps in there, but I don't really want to criticize other people's Kickstarters. Everybody does things differently.
Sure.
I mean, one of the things that we had a focus on our Kickstarter was to have great levels of interaction with the fans. The production process all through has been documented. There's been a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. It's surprising to me how many people just don't understand what kind of work is required to put together a show, whether it's, okay, we're designing the packaging, or, okay, this is how the approval's working, or, okay, now here's some samples of the production process for the upscale, and here's some samples from the dub, and so on. To me, the key is really interacting with the fans.
Right.
And I think we take that experience from, you know, our e-commerce efforts, and the outreach that we already do with customers now. I think it's important for, especially if somebody's going to invest their hard-earned money, you know, they want to make sure that they're going to get something that they're going to enjoy, and, you know, that it's going to show up and not be all beat up, and that people are going to communicate with them periodically to let them know what's going on. I've purchased some Kickstarters myself. You know, you give your money in, and 2 years later, you haven't heard anything from anybody, and out of the blue, there's an update saying, hey, we're going to ship your stuff. Well,
yeah.
In that two-year interim, you're kind of like, well, did I throw my money in the toilet? Or, I mean, is this actually going to happen? I mean, there's a couple Kickstarters as of late that I remember where it's been a long time before, you know, anybody gets anything, and then it's kind of like, wow, I backed this? I don't even remember doing that.
Yeah.
So frequent interaction, I think, was one thing. We had a lot of involvement. Like anything else, some production pieces just you can't get into huge levels of detail because there's just a lot of stuff to do, and some things you're interacting with the licensor. I can't come back and say, well, the licensor thought this sucked, or, you know, they wouldn't allow us to do this, that, and the other thing. But I think we were pretty transparent, and I think that was one of the things that was exciting. I mean, the other was, I think that there was a genuine love for this program. It's a cute show.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people, it sort of generated kind of a special connection, given that it is kind of a cult hit, and it's a healing anime. So, like, kind of put these two things together, and that's a really specific audience, right?
Right. I think also people wanted to, you know, support the fact that we were going to get back into doing some dubbing work as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't done a dub for several years.
So did you?
It's expensive. I mean, you get dubbing is really pricey, and you'll see comments, or I'll see comments when we go through this. Well, why didn't you just dub everything else then? Well, you know, you bet the farm sometimes on this. I mean, we're not, you know, one of the larger studios here. If I drop $250,000 on a dub and it doesn't sell, well, that's a huge impact.
Yeah.
To us. So the risk level is diminished from the Kickstarter to a point, but it's also a credibility thing. If our Kickstarters fail, well, you know what? That doesn't look good.
Yeah.
So having this particular one be so successful also was a big boost for our credibility, for our business plan, for some of the stuff that we've been doing on these.
Did you enjoy going back and to work on a dub?
It's a ball. I love watching the dubs, and, you know, the people we have in these dubs, or this particular show, we worked with a lot of these guys before. If you look at Veronica Taylor, she's in a huge batch of our dubs. Lisa's in a number of our dubs. You know, Jessica Cavella's in a number of our dubs. You know, we got a lot of the Pokemon folks that were the New York actors, because we did all of our dubbing in New York at the time. And it was kind of a huge pleasure to go back and see some of these folks and work with these guys that we hadn't used for a long time. You know, then they've moved on to other things. I think they also got a kick out of coming back and doing work on shows with us. I mean, some of them really haven't done a whole lot of anime dubbing for a while, or moved on to, you know, video games or other things that they're doing, or they've been, you know, drowning in Pokemon or doing non-voice act work, whether it's, you know, directing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So getting involved with those people and being involved in that process has been a ball. I mean, it's fun to go back and see that, and the response that we've seen from the people who have received their first season, they seem real happy with the materials that they got for the rewards, and I've heard, you know, nothing but positive things about the dub and the upscale, and that's also really encouraging.
Yeah, right. So that seemed to have gone pretty well, and you've got the rest of the show is in on schedule to, you know, release within, what, this year, next year? Probably not this year.
Well, I think we'll probably be into next year by the time, you know, keep in mind, we weren't planning to dub four seasons of this plus a bunch of extras. Yeah. So, and then we added things like cast commentaries and so on. So it's taking longer than our original plan. But that's okay. I would say by early next year, we should be done with everything.
Right.
And, you know, that also gives us room while we're, because we do have actors in here that we have to actually import. You know, some of these people actually don't live in New York anymore. Mm. And so we fly them in and they work on the show for a marathon session and then they fly back out. So that'll give us a little bit of flexibility also for this new Kickstarter because we can kind of slot that in between some of the other recording sessions. So that's going to be a plus as well. But I would say by early next year, we should be done. I'd be surprised if we don't have season two. I mean, I know season two, part one, will definitely be shipping in the next couple months. And then you know, hopefully we'll move the others as quick as we can.
Cool. So when was the decision made, okay, the next one's going to be Emma?
We actually had thought about doing Emma back at the same time we were doing Aria. Some of that really came down to, you know, making some different choices. And a lot of it also comes down to working with the people in Japan. There is a level of back and forth discussion that's required to get these things approved. I can't just decide I want to do a Kickstarter and do it. I mean, Japan's
sure.
not going to go for that.
Yeah.
So there is some licensing considerations that came into play. And Aria, we just thought that would be the strongest title to start with. And the licensor was very cooperative. And the director was on board and excited. And the author of the manga was excited. And so we just kind of decided that would be the direction that we would go first. Emma's going to have some unique challenges, and we wanted to have some time to think out how we were going to deal with those. And, you know, there's other things that we could maybe do in the future as well. So it's right now, Aria not expecting to do the other three.
Right.
And so now we had kind of that conundrum of, okay, well, how do we proceed?
So what are some of those challenges that Emma provides?
Well, Emma is a very different show. I mean, in some ways, when we did our kickoff video for Emma, I was joking about how Emma was the same as Aria, except, you know, there's no water and it's not in a foreign planet and it, you know, there's no boats. And,
sure.
You know, but it's the same. But Emma obviously is set in Victorian England. And so a lot of the commentary we got when we originally licensed this title was, well, it's Victorian England and they're talking Japanese and that's very jarring and I can't get into it and that bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to put together a dub for this product that once we do put it out, that's going to be just as jarring because it's not going to sound like it should.
Right.
So that's going to be the biggest challenge that we face with this. You know, secondly, it was not nearly heavily as merchandised in Japan. Aria had the advantage of Avenir had been released, you know, later on. And so there was more merchandise that was available. It was a wider scene program. Emma, it was, you know, more of a stealth, it was an older, it's a catalog title, but it was not, there was nothing current about it that we could tie to, short of the manga had been re-released here in the States recently by Yen Press,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. The manga is for this title with the hardcover omnibuses are just gorgeous.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, the challenges came into that as well as, you know, we had to go back again to a different licensor and explain to him how this works you know, talk about how that's going to work with the director and with the license group over there and you know, what was going to be required from them in terms of, okay, well, this is what we need from you. There's no HD version of this in Japan at all.
Right.
And so there was another hurdle to overcome where we would have an HD version and Japan doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
That's virtually unheard of.
Virtually, but yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, the show, it's not, I mean, it was produced in like 540p or whatever. It was an old DigiPaint show, so like that's why there's no HD version yet, I assume. Or at least, like it just wasn't released on Blu-ray yet? That's pretty much it?
Well, what I'm saying is, if you look at Aria, there was a Blu-ray released for that show.
Right,
and
sure.
Avenir was made in HD. But the Blu-ray existed in Japan already. with Aria, with Emma, there is no Blu-ray that exists even for sale in Japan and never has been.
Sure.
So the U.S. audience would receive a product that the Japanese audience has never had access to.
But doesn't that also mean that you have to, you're going to be the one fronting the production cost for that?
Yes.
Okay. So will your version be the one that gets sold in Japan?
You know, I don't really know on that. I mean, we've talked to them about that. I'm not sure what the ultimate licensor's plan in Japan will be.
But as it looks right now,
They may just never re-release it ever again in Japan. I can't comment to what their plan is. But, you know, like I said, really, the big thing here is that the title will be released HD here when it has not been released HD in Japan. I really, off the top of my head, can't come up with another title that's been that way.
I can think of situations where no one could get the license because they wouldn't sell it to anybody until they had released something on Blu-ray in Japan. Like, yeah. That definitely has happened where, like, we didn't get it for a really, really, or we got an inferior version, and then they, which has definitely happened. So this is really, that's really interesting. We will have the North American Blu-ray of Emma will be the only, That's really, that is unique. That is a unique situation. And was that tough to negotiate, or were they just kind of like, eh?
Oh, no, that was a big piece of, that was one of the more complicated pieces of putting this together.
Oh, that is fascinating. So this Kickstarter is only for the first season, right?
Yeah, there was a stretch goal for the second season, but the first season is where what we started with, similar to how we handled Aria. It looks like we're almost to the first season goal, which will be fantastic if we can get there. And then we'll look at the stretch goal, and if we can push up to being able to dub the second season, then certainly that'll be the direction that we'd like to go. Obviously, when you're dealing with something like this, too, you want it to be a success. So if we put this out and say, well, we're only going to do this if we dub both seasons, and we say that right on the front end, and it fails, well, then we look stupid, there's a perception that the nobody wants it or whatever, which isn't necessarily true. It's better to have a achievable goal on the front end without having a problem, I think, reaching it than to, go for the touchdown from the 1 yard line and hope.
Right. Yeah. I can't imagine that you won't hit this. You're about 20,000 away. You've got 20 days left. It seems like you'll definitely hit that, at least that first season. And Aria kind of went the same way. Like, I'm sure you've been comparing these two in terms of number of backers and amount over time. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine things are looking rosy right now.
Well, this one has changed. It's different, I think, than the original one we did, where Aria had a ramp up, and then kind of evened out as we got to each plateau of reaching the stretch goals. You kind of see a pattern. This one, compared to what we raised on the first day for Aria, the raise on the first day Emma was significantly higher. And I think, part of that is the fact that people saw that we actually did that.
Right.
We actually created the product and we delivered. In a lot of Kickstarter projects, people put money into it and then nobody ever delivers. So,
yeah.
And they never see their stuff and the money goes away. We have some credibility, I think, in the marketplace, for our own, web presence, our e-commerce presence, and our our production label, and so on. But I think that it just creates another layer of credibility to say, okay, well, we did our first Kickstarter, and we have, although not delivered the entire thing, have delivered a portion of it, including all of the merchandise rewards.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's no reason to think that you're not going to get the rest of it at this point. Like, or that this will be somehow a distraction from finishing Aria. Like, that's not really the way it falls down. Like, most companies, maybe they don't have the luxury or just can't do it this way. But it seems to me like establishing that credibility is like really important for your second Kickstarter. If you're going to do another one, the first one should probably be in people's hands in at least some capacity.
Well, that was the consensus we ended up with over here before we decided we wanted to do another one. We wanted to be able to have it in people's hands. Keep in mind also, even with this 30-day window that we have, when this funds, there's a lot of pre-production work that's going to need to be done.
Right.
So it's going to take a little bit of time to get Emma out the door, but you know, there's no reason we can't do both of these concurrently. Now, if we said, okay, we're going to do four Kickstarters at a time, well, that would stretch resources. So I probably wouldn't want to do that because then we're going to just delay everything and so on. But I think with this particular, where we're at with this right now, I mean, we have the second, the first part of the second season already dubbed. So, I mean, we'll be able to slot this in and kind of do both at the same time and still be able to deliver. So I don't anticipate any production problems.
So on the Kickstarter page, you know, this is all about dubbing the show, but, you know, obviously casting hasn't been announced. Are you sort of counting those chickens before they're hatched and getting into the, like, the casting before this has been funded, or will that process start after?
Well, I mean, even with Aria, I mean, we talked to some people, and that kind of came together. This is going to be a little bit more complicated for casting. So we did kind of want to see how far this was going to go before we went, we started committing huge amounts of resources to it. I mean, based on the response where we're at right now, I mean, we have done some of that work. I mean, we're in the process of making that happen. So we're not saying, well, we're going to wait till the very last minute and do it. But unlike Aria, I mean, it's not something where, okay, we have everybody ready to go and we're going to announce cast member after cast member after cast member. I want to make sure we take our time with this particular product, especially with this program, because of its uniqueness and how it will have to be treated.
Yeah, so everyone's got to have an authentic sounding British accent, right? So you don't want to hire like a ton of people from the Midwest, or maybe you do if they all do totally spectacular British accents, but I would imagine the goal is to get as authentic as possible, right?
Well, of course. I mean, I was going to cast myself as William, but I mean, I didn't think anybody would believe it. So, I mean, it could have been fun, but my Midwest accent probably isn't going to cut it. So, yeah, we want the dub to be authentic. We want somebody to watch this and say, wow, you know, I feel like I'm in Victorian England. I mean, you're never going to have it be perfect. I mean, it's kind of funny. I've watched a couple things on one of the video game dubs I was reading about where they actually had the entire thing filmed in the UK or recorded in the UK, and people were criticizing the British accents.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, so every, you know, there's a whole lot of different British accents even in Britain, just like there's whole lots of English American accents in America. So
yeah,
somebody from the Midwest doesn't sound like somebody from Boston. Or for Los Angeles, for that matter. So I think that the goal is to make this feel as authentic as we possibly can, whether I have to have to go through and reject all kinds of people for it and just keep going until we find somebody we're happy with. I mean, I will say that our production team are very, very picky, and they like this show, and they don't want to make crap.
So, right, yeah, of course not.
You know,
yeah.
Just like with Aria, I mean, we're going to keep moving until we're happy with it, and, you know, our people would be willing to buy it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, those complaints, like, back in the day, that's always been a thing. Like, back in the day, it was New Generation Pictures was kind of famous for doing a lot of accent work in their dubs, like mm-hmm. Helsing, Licensed by Royalty, mm-hmm. and they would bring in people with authentic accents. And then, you know, I would chat with them afterward and be like, you know, they're complaining about this lady's voice. It's like, she's British. Like, this is absurd. This is a perfect accent. But those guys really knew what they were doing on that front. It's funny to just the fans will are very predictable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's always going to be somebody who's unhappy with something. I mean, you could say that people were unhappy with Deadpool 2 versus Deadpool 1, you know,
sure.
Or, you know, the reboot of Star Trek. There's going to be people that are disappointed because they have an attachment to how they think it should sound, and if, you know, maybe it just doesn't match that. So we're going to do the best we possibly can, and that's you know why we hope that people will support it. They feel that we're going to make that extra effort to give them a product that they're going to really enjoy.
Cool. Well, it'll be exciting to see those cast announcements whenever they wind up happening. It seems like you're at the very beginning of this project, so it'll be exciting to watch it unfold.
Yeah, we've actually rejected some people that already. So,
oh really?
Don't see anything.
All right. Okay then. All right. So you've got the Kickstarters going. How have things been going for Write Stuff from a retail perspective?
Pretty fantastic. We had a nice sales increase last year.
Yeah.
Seeing a lot of people who are still willing to purchase packaged media. I think Netflix and some of the other services taking products down does remind people that streaming doesn't last forever. And if you want to have these products, you should, if you want to have them forever, you're going to have to buy a disc for it. So, we've seen an increase also in the merchandise sales and so on, and I think that that's also a very important piece of the puzzle. And with the simulcasts and such, that's definitely helped people to get a feel for some of these products and have demand for them when they come out. So the sales cycle has certainly changed in the course of the last 3 or 4 years. But there's still a very nice demand for the product, especially if you get into some of the more collectible releases. And I think that's, you've seen that trend across the entire Blu-ray and DVD market as a whole, where, complete seasons or special editions, something that has non-streamable content on it, is in demand from somebody who's definitely a fan of the program, or it has a merchandise item that's included that somebody's very excited about and so on.
Right. It's whatever it is, it's more than just the show itself.
The Gundam 00 anniversary set that we put out. I mean, it's got a huge, thick art book. I mean, it's enormous. It's got a two boxes, one box is within another box. It's got a cloth poster in it. It's got a keychain in it. It's got, and all the content. I think you see some of those type of releases where they're a premium. I mean, if you look at some of the top sellers, that's where a lot of the top sellers are right now. You've seen a shift. The market continues to age, which I mean, that doesn't really make me feel good because, it just tells me I'm getting older.
Sure.
But the older people generally obviously have a little more disposable income, and they're willing and they're excited about some of these programs, and they're willing to pay extra for a collectible set. Some of the younger crowd may be more focused on, their Crunchyroll subscription or their Funimation Now subscription or so on.
Well, yeah, but when they get a little older, they're going to be like, well, I remember this show and I loved it, so I kind of want to have a physical copy of it because I don't know that the streaming version will be there for me forever. Mm-hmm. So, got to get the disc.
Well, streaming has become the television that was in the, in the 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, that was where you got your huge exposure, was the product was on Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
Or it was on one of the cable channels or whatever. That is not as important to the market now, although certainly it's great when it does happen. The streaming has become that, try it before you buy it type of medium.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see that sales have kind of, and that's a trend that you've noticed too, because it feels to me, at least based on just like observing fans, is that, you're right that there is that attitude of like, well, everything is streaming, so I don't need physical media. But it feels like now people are really, like you said, like Netflix pulling some stuff down or just straight up not making things available has really made people aware that like, oh, if I really did love the show, I should buy it. And it creates a lot of frustration, too, especially on some of that Netflix stuff. Like, I can't buy Devilman Crybaby. I can't buy it. I could import it from Japan, but like Netflix will probably never make that available here. Which totally kills me, and then at the same time motivates me to buy the shows that I do have access to in the meantime. So it feels almost like culturally people are becoming a little bit more aware of the very transient nature of streaming and what that means for them as a nerd, as somebody who really loves this stuff, as a media fan,
Well, you've got the entrance of these big players like Netflix and Amazon that have brought these things. They're not packaged media companies.
No, of course not.
Netflix doesn't have a DVD or Blu-ray releasing arm. So, and their business is streaming. They're going to want their content on streaming because that's where they make their money.
Right.
So, I'm not really surprised by that. I mean, there has been some of those products that do make their way eventually out to packaged media. But you have so many people that have watched them on Netflix that it does make it somewhat difficult on some of the sales for those, versus, a product that hasn't been on those services.
Oh, is that something that you've noticed where like if, a show that is widely available or at least popularized via Netflix suffers on packaged media as a result?
Well, I mean, think about the perception of this. If I have something that's on Crunchyroll and I know that may be transient, then, you know, it disappears, I'm going to have to buy it, or I want to buy it because I'm concerned it will be. Netflix is never going to disappear on their own content.
Sure. We assume.
But why would they ever take their stuff down? They yeah. own it.
Well, yeah, but it's a case by case. You know, that's...
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I think that that does have an impact. You know, I also think that it just depends on the program as well. I mean, there's always going to be certain programs that perform better than others, so...
So when it comes to the packaged media, like your top sellers, is it a mix of top popular franchises and these big sort of like Gundam 00? You know, that show's a little it's been out for quite a while. It's selling, I assume, to hardcore Gundam collectors. And that I would put that I mean, I hesitate to call it a classic, but it is an older show. It's not My Hero Academia or Attack on Titan, is what I'm saying. So. Are your best sellers mostly composed of those things, major franchises, and these big collector's editions of popular shows?
Well, I mean, there's a mix. Right. These collector's editions really do stand out. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, if you look at like a Yuri on Ice limited edition set,
sure.
I mean, we performed enormously well with that. That
right.
sold incredible numbers. You can look at the Sword Art Online. So you can look at No Game, No Life Zero. These are titles that okay. are, you know, My Hero Academia, like you mentioned earlier, ReZero. All these titles are all up at the top of the piece. But, you know, the collector set, when you come in and say, okay, well, Yuri on Ice, did the standard edition sell as well for us? No. The limited edition blew the standard edition out of the water.
Right.
You know, I can look at the Utena, you know, Ultimate Edition that we put out. I mean, that sold incredibly well for us. In fact, we're almost out of the run that we did for it. The 00 one, I mean, I agree, it's an older title, but it hasn't been available, and, you know, it's an anniversary set with on Blu-ray, which hasn't been released here before, and so on. So you do get the cult people looking for that content, and that does cause it to sell good numbers. But there's also the standard perennial stuff that still sells, you know, every day, and there's these new products in the market, like I mentioned, Yuri or My Hero or you know, Fate Grand Order, you know, some of these titles that are newer to the scene versus your classics or your you know, the titles that are or catalog.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So it seems like overall is pretty healthy. This seems like a pretty healthy smattering of stuff that actually moves.
Well, the market, I mean, after kind of dropping for a while,
right.
Which I think part of that was just due to the dearth of programming in Japan. I mean, there was a kind of a lull in new exciting stuff there for a while. That's changed. I mean, there's a lot more investment in new content that's coming now versus, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. So you have, you know, the fans that grew up with some of these programs that were very excited about them and you know, they're re-experiencing them themselves because they love them or want to share them with their kids or, you know, just are now finding out about them. You know, you get the new fans who also might just be finding out about some of these more classic titles, even when they're reinventing. I mean, a great example of that is Gundam. I mean, there's still new Gundam coming out right now.
Right.
You know, Thunderbolt was incredibly popular. You know, we've got the live action feature that's going to be coming at some point in the near future. But you've got titles that have, you know, kind of made new. It's kind of like these movies where they create a new version of, you know, Ghostbusters. You know, personally, I don't know if I would give you much of my feedback on that one. But, you know, they do reinvent franchises, and that does allow both of those age groups to really experience some of these titles.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it sort of lifts all boats.
Your Name, great. I mean, it's a great example. Your Name, fantastic release. We sold a ton of it,
mm-hmm.
and that's you know, that's current.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Have you noticed in your take as a retailer, the fans often will complain that these days maybe there's too much of this stuff. You know, 40 or 50 new titles every 3 months, something like that. When it comes to retail, it's not quite as much of a fire hose. I feel like a lot of the studios have gotten a little bit pickier about what they'll actually put out. From your end, do you see it as there being a glut? Is there too much content?
Well, I mean, first off, I'm really surprised you would think that any anime fan would complain about anything.
What?
I mean, that just doesn't happen at all. I would say there is a the supply of content is higher,
mm-hmm.
And that does cause some difficulties in terms of sales.
Yeah.
But I think that difficulty is, it just means that you, as a retailer, you have to be able to figure out the market segment that you're selling to.
Right.
You know, okay, so we know these people are sci-fi fans. Well, we need to market to those people in that way. The content is fairly broad at this point. So if you look at, you know, something as you know, like Free or Yuri on Ice versus, you know, Sword Art Online or Zero, that kind of thing, there's different audiences there. So
right.
I think that one of the things I would say is there is a wider breadth of content. It's not all action films. It's
right.
not all moe films.
Right.
You have the ability to serve a wider audience than you had in the past. And so that, I think, creates is the challenge is to, okay, we have a lot of content, but who do we sell it to? And can we broaden our market and broaden our audience to look at titles when, you know, maybe they weren't anime fans, but they find out that there's a title that's very interesting to them. I mean, Emma to me is a great example. Is if we can get beyond just the Emma anime fans and the Emma manga fans, I'm excited about those people. I want to work with them to get this content out the door. But if we are able to expose that to somebody who's a British drama fan that's so excited about watching, you know, Downton Abbey, or, you know, somebody who like Sense and Sensibility or something like that, who we can then bring in and increase our audience too. I think that's how we handle the fact that we have more content. You have to find more consumers for that content.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't really think about the appeal to a broader audience by having a dub for Emma, but that really must have held that show back from finding that audience. I guess I hadn't really put those two things together, but it's like, yeah, the audience that you would think would just be all over Emma, a Victorian romance, might be a little put off by the fact that it's in Japanese, like you said. So having that dub, even just being able to show people a trailer with the voices, might pull in that audience. Yeah, that's exciting.
Well, it's certainly not going to hurt.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think you have the same thing with even any of these, the newer titles that are outside of that market. I mean, if you have a lot of these new action titles. If you look at Netflix's exposure, I mean, having Amazon and Netflix have, you know, big budget anime titles on their platforms, you know, it gives us the ability, hopefully, to grow the audience for anime as a whole.
Yeah.
And anything we could do to do that is a positive for us as a market.
Well, that's what all these giant media corporations are trying to do. This year, I think. Okay, so before we get to some of these Twitter questions, I usually ask, were there any surprises on your bestsellers list for this year? Anything where you know, weren't quite expecting it to do as well as it did, but it wound up being a nice surprise?
You know, to be honest, no.
Now everything is like, yep, that's going to go.
this year, the stuff that we expected to be the breakout hits were the breakout hits.
All right.
I wasn't really hugely surprised. But I will say that, the Yuri on Ice fans really popped out because that number went, that really was, I knew it would be a strong title, but it sold way more than I thought it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I'm like, well, I'm not really sure here. And then the pre-orders just blew up the day that we put it up. So, but as usual, you have some of the strong franchises that are at the top. And it's difficult when you get the big budget stuff to have something that pops up, you know, higher on the radar when you have, you know, titles like My Hero Academia in there.
Right.
You know, Sword Art Online, Ordinal Scale, I mean, that was a little, that came out in terms of almost, again, continuing an older franchise that's been out for a while, and it was strong. You know, No Game, No Life, again, the new Zero, it's another reinvigoration of the franchise. I think we'll see, you know, when the new Attack on Titan hits, that's gonna bring that franchise back to the forefront too. So, you do have a reinventing of some of the perennials. I mean, there's another Dragon Ball movie coming. You know, there's always going to be the stuff that continues to sell strong. I'm trying to think, the breakout things like Your Name, I think, are the ones that make me happy, where you get something that's not a franchise that just kind of pops up.
Yeah. That's always nice when that happens. It feels like it's the deck is stacked against.
That was a great show.
Yeah, it was. Right. I saw that movie again like a couple of months ago, and was it's like astonishing how well made that movie is. Like, it's sitting there watching it, you feel like you're you can't imagine, like, it comes together so well. But it's nice when something like that pops up, because it feels like the deck is stacked against original anything. Like, anything that you don't recognize already, like, the deck is stacked against it, and you don't really expect it to pop up. Like, I'm sure you expect that top 10 to be the same 10 franchises remixed a little bit, you know, over and over and over again. So
there's part of that. I mean, yeah. Certainly, there's definitely part of that. I was trying to think of it. Another title that kind of threw us for a loop was that Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Right.
That was one that pushed up to the top. That wasn't something I expected right off the top of the head, I guess. I think it's great. There's so much content coming out. I would like to see more and more of it if it's not, you know, the same. You know, I think people love to explore an audience. I mean, I'm a Star Trek fan. I love that they can continue to make more Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the ability to have other things that aren't the perennial titles. For people to check them out, I think is good. I would love to see some of these up and coming directors and productions come up and blow up into the top 10 or 20 versus them always being some of these, you know, franchise titles.
Right, totally. All right. Well, we got some Twitter questions for you here. Let's go ahead and move into these. Right. No, I don't think it's anything too tough this time, but, you know, we'll see.
You have some softballs you're going to throw at me this time? Come on.
I think so. All right. So from our friend Bunny Cartoon, she says, I know it's a long shot, but is there any chance you consider re-releasing some of the old VHS-only titles that you once had, like Lita, Fantastic Adventures of Yoko, or iCity?
Anything is possible. I mean, certainly we always are looking for catalog titles that we can put through. Our strategy has been kind of to go that direction simply because we don't have the streaming component for the newer programs. And, you know, the newer programs also have become so incredibly expensive that they're just out of our range. But I like the classics, so there's lots of really great stuff there. It's certainly possible. I wouldn't rule it out.
You could do a Kickstarter and raise enough money to license a single episode of something.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, there's obviously been Kickstarters for people to create pilots and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. No, my comment was mostly about the absolutely absurd minimum guarantees that most new anime are at.
It's insane.
Yeah, like your Aria Kickstarter like would maybe get a single episode. major show.
Which I think is wonderful. I mean, I think it's wonderful the Japanese are making all that money.
Right.
As long as they're continuing to invest in the new programming, I suppose.
Sure, yeah. It'd be great if a lot of all that money would go down to the people who actually made the shows. That would be ideal, I think. All right. Final Fury K wants to know, although I totally want iCity and... and Yoko, so if you ever put those out, I'm in line for them. Final Fury K wants to know, can you go into any details about your Ultimate Edition Captain Tyler box? Will it have all the OVA and TV shows? I mean, obviously you're not going to make any announcements about this here, but is this still in production? Is this still happening?
Well, I had talked about that at the last couple cons. You know, that is my favorite show, so I want to put out something that's really neat. The thing that I always worry about when you put out one of these classic programs is when you start creating these ultimate editions, you know, for example, Utena, you know, we had a huge box in there and we had these rings in there, and the rings were expensive, and, you know, that was a whole other issue because of the way that we had to replace them. But the challenge that you have when you have a deluxe set is, can you make enough units in order to bring the cost of the individual pieces down? I mean, I want to come up with something that's so compelling for people that we would be able to sell a large number of units quickly, so that I'd be able to say, okay, well, we can put this into production and we can, you know, make this book. Or let's say, for example, we have a pseudo Kickstarter and we say, well, we're going to make the book this many pages unless we get this many orders, and then we're going to make it this many pages. I mean, I have collected everything Tyler that you can possibly collect, if it's at all possible for me to do so.
Right.
Some things which, like, you know, the light novels, they're not going to make the set as much as I would love that to be the case. you know, that's a manga publisher. We would have to go license it separately. Then it's commingled with a video release, which nobody likes.
Right.
And it becomes a real problem. However, I would like to read them someday.
Right.
Since there's no translation for them. But there's a lot of nice stuff I'd like to put in that set. I guess my goal there is probably to put something together that would be on our website that would say, okay, we're going to take pre-orders for this title, and as we get more and more pre-orders, the cooler the set's going to be. You know, put a basic piece together. I mean, it wouldn't be a Kickstarter, really. I mean, certainly we could make a Kickstarter to make the Tyler Blu-ray set, but I don't really think it's necessary. There's a fan base for it, and it's already dubbed, and, you know, that's not an issue. So it's just the matter of, okay, do I want that hardback book that's inside to be 400 pages? Because I could easily make that happen.
Right.
You know, I've got enough art and interviews and all that kind of stuff inside of it. What kind of merchandise items do you want? Because, I mean, if somebody has a premium set, they want something in there that's more than just the Blu-rays. I mean, I could just make Tyler standard Blu-rays and put them out. I mean, but is that going to be exciting to people? Probably not. I mean, when we decided we were going to put a Tequila Gundam shut glass in the G Gundam set, and people went nuts. So, I mean, obviously there's certain things people would think it's kind of fun to have in a set. So, you know, the other option or the other issue with that show, obviously, is it's 25 years old. So being able to get approvals on things is somewhat complicated. Getting certain designs or certain things that we think that we could make is somewhat complicated. But we will make this set. It's not that I'm not going to make it. It's just a question of how I will make it and what we'll put in it. You know, the cost of goods on things, you know, one of the things, there's somebody, I put a post up on one of the collector groups. I said, what should we put in the set? One of the, you know, comments was, well, we want a model kit of the Soyokaze. Well, yeah, I would love that too, but you know how much money that would cost?
Right.
You know, to build a prototype, to have it approved, you would have to make thousands and thousands of them to bring the cost down to make it possible to put that in that set at a reasonable price. I could make one, it'd probably cost $1,000. Or I could make, you know, 50, and they'd probably still cost $800-$900. But to get something down to $3 to $5 or $10 or whatever that you could put in that set, you would have to make 10,000 of them. So that's the other catch-22 when you make these premium sets, and you'll see that in you know, all of the premium sets across the industry. It's, you know, what do you put in these that people would be excited about?
Right.
That would make it so that they would want to plunk their hard-earned money down for a premium set versus buying a standard set.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, would I want a model kit coming with Blu-rays?
Iron-Blooded Orphans set contained a Gunpla, and people were excited about that.
But that's Gundam, and like, you expect the model kit maybe to be in a Gundam. But even then, like, you're still separating part of the set off and then taking it out of a package and assembling it, and then, like, you know, I don't know.
Well, if you're excited about Gunpla, which a lot of people are, it's a nice thing to have in there.
Yeah.
But to make those, you know, you got to sell a lot of units, or you have to have something that's already been made.
Right.
Which, you know, that's a brand new show. So there's already merchandise in Japan that's been designed and approved and ready to go. So you eliminate a number of steps that would be required, the prototyping and all the other stuff that would be necessary in order to build the items for a set like that.
So you'd have to find, like, a warehouse.
Go ahead. I mean, if I was able to put that Tyler set up and say, it's going to be really cool and you're going to love it, and 1,000 people bought that within the first 2 weeks, well, then, you know, I would make the most amazing set that you'd ever seen.
Right.
But if I put it up for sale and 200 people buy it, well, then the cost of goods on making each one is so incredibly high that it wouldn't even really be worth making.
I mean,
we would lose money.
Right.
So, I mean, it's difficult to know, you know, whether or not you're going to have a good response. I mean, I personally think Tyler's a fantastic show. I think it's a perennial show, but a lot of people don't know it. And, you know, it'd be like if I decided that instead of doing a Kickstarter for Emma, we were going to make an enormous premium box set, and we were going to put all this fantastic stuff in it. But how we would be betting on a huge unknown.
Right.
So yep. That's kind of where I've been thinking, is I might just put that thing up for sale and just keep adding cooler and cooler stuff to it or more pages to the books, or more interviews, or more art, or whatever, you know, based on how many of the units we've sold. I kind of look at Funimation's Bebop experiment as kind of an interesting look on or take on that, where they were going to put the vinyl in the set, but they had to sell a certain number of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
and then everybody wanted the vinyl, and you couldn't buy it separately.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to like hope there's a warehouse in, like a warehouse in Japan just sitting there full of like, you know, Captain Tyler models that you could just buy.
that would be wonderful, but 25 years on, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, right.
Although you still see people that find a 63 Corvette in pristine condition in a warehouse in Nebraska.
Right.
So I mean, I suppose anything is possible.
Similar question wants to know: Turn A Gundam movies on Blu-ray. Is that
I don't have a plan on that right now.
Okay. Also another Tyler question from Exidor DE. If you're going to make this box, are you thinking about going back to the film elements or using that Japanese upscale that already exists?
You know, I haven't decided what we're going to do with that. I mean, if we were to go back to film, then obviously there's an enormous expense there.
Yeah.
Would we use the Japanese upscale? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, maybe we just do our own. It's really going to depend on, it'll probably depend on sales, and it'll probably depend on, how much I want to put into the production of the title. I mean, I would love to go back to the film.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fantastic, but I would have to go to Japan and supervise that because they're not going to send over film prints here.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, do you have access? Do you know if that, can you get access to
it? I could definitely get access. It would probably be complicated.
Right.
I've not attempted to do so. There's nothing I would love better.
Yeah.
The cost of transferring for film, I mean, even when you look at Sailor Moon, they didn't originally do that, and they finally did, but it's an enormous expense to do a new telecine transfer from film.
It sure is. That would be exciting, though. Let's see here. Magica Girl Asuka wants to know, when running an anime Kickstarter, is it difficult to explain why you should be taking the Kickstarter route to the executives that you are licensing the show from?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Why is it tough?
It's not a commonplace thing in Japan.
Right.
The whole concept of crowdsourcing is not... You know, anybody has a big question mark on it because, you know, how does everybody get paid and what's required for it? And it would be one thing if you could do it and there would be no rewards.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, then you're looking at, you know, not getting merchandising. Merchandising is a separate license generally when you license a product. Just like video and streaming are separate pieces of or components in a licensing agreement. So it creates there's a lot of the balls that you throw in the air at these guys. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, now I have to put my neck on the line that your Kickstarter project is going to fund, and if the original author says, you know, well, what if they don't like it? It becomes political on top of that. So it is a difficult thing to do. If you have a previous relationship with a lot of the production group, it makes it easier. But even then, there's always the question marks in there. There's a reason why you don't see lots of these. There's a reason why it takes a long time to get somebody to work with you on stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
We had looked at, even with Aria, it had talked about it for some time before we actually were able to put that together.
Right, yeah. I feel like that I've heard that a lot. Like, that's typically the story is like this is a difficult process, and like you have to open people up to it. It's not something people are just willing to get into.
Well, I think another thing you need to look at that is too on the back side of it. I mean, there's been Kickstarters, but some of them have not had real positive feedback.
Yeah, right.
Whether it's the, you know, it took too long for it to make, or the product showed up and it was damaged. The vendor who did it didn't really budget anything in there to make any money, and therefore the licensor didn't receive any royalties whatsoever.
Right.
There's been a number of other pieces in that play. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, we try to tie our e-commerce experience to what we're doing, because you have a credibility there saying, well, we know how to package a product, we know how to price products, and so on.
Yeah, fulfillment is kind of a thing we know how to do already, so.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a few questions wondering if Gundam Seed is even on the release list or schedule. I know you can't make any announcements, but I'm pretty sure you said at one point that all of Gundam would be coming out eventually.
Well, there will be all of the Gundam. Right. I've already said at conventions that you'll see that in 2019.
Okay.
I can't give you the exact date, and I'm not going to. Part of that really comes down to the fact that the product is being dubbed again. I mean, and that's not finished.
Right.
So I would guess that you'll see it in some form. And probably in a couple of different forms in 2019, but I've also committed to including the original Bandai dub as well as the new dub on the in an ultimate set. We will definitely do that. But at this point, I mean, I can't release a product that hasn't even been finished yet. So,
why not?
It's going to take a while.
Just why don't you give us an unfinished version and then sell us the finished one down the road? It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, people love to buy things twice.
Yeah,
Everybody likes spending the money and then having to buy it again the next time. I would love to have that out sooner rather than later. But I mean, that's really kind of the we're in a little bit of a holding pattern there while production is being completed.
People will just appreciate Gundam Seed even more when they finally get their hands on it.
I hope so.
Yeah, next year.
In the meantime, perhaps you should look at maybe G Gundam, because that actually will be out this year.
Well, speaking of
that.
Right, speaking of G Gundam,
Double Zero.
I mean, I feel like the inspiration the inspiration for the Shot Glass is pretty obvious. But here's the question: what inspired the Shot Glass for that? And did you look at all at the very? There are a bunch of Gundam G Gundam one shot manga, and George Horvat, Land of Obscusion, wants to know if you looked at any of those as potential extras for this set.
I do agree with you that the Tequila Gundam is kind of a cool tie-in that was easy to choose from.
Right.
It's Tequila Gundam. I mean, come on. In fact, there's a running joke around the office. We talk about Tequila Gundam almost all the time because we have a gal here that is a cosplayer, has made these amazing Gundam cosplay outfits. And I keep trying to convince her to make a Tequila Gundam one.
Right.
The manga, I mean, keep in mind that, print and video are generally, not, the same licensor, and because of that, we really didn't consider that because it would be additional licensing fees and so on that would have to be required to make that happen. We went with that. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting Gundams in that show. It is a bizarre show. We just settled on that because we thought it was funny and it's cool. And a shot glass is something people will use. So, drink shots while you watch G Gundam. Why would you not?
Right, sure. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Itchnator asks, are there factors that determine what anime gets a Kickstarter from Right Stuff, besides the fact that it's been previously released and didn't have a dub? Would you consider doing a Kickstarter for a show that you hadn't already released before?
There are a lot of factors. Having a product that we have not released at all is much more complicated on a Kickstarter process, because then you have to include all of the licensing fees for it on the front end, and generally Japan will not allow that. They want their money.
Right.
So you have to license the product before you can really do a Kickstarter. Now, obviously, after we've licensed the money, we can kick the money, the MG, into the cost of the actual Kickstarter goal. But we would probably not be in a position where we could say, well, we want to put out, X title. So if you give us enough money, we'll go license it. I mean, that's probably not going to happen. Titles that we have in our library are easier. But that doesn't mean that, that we're going to be able to convince anybody to do any of those either. So, it really has to be done on a case by case basis. There's a lot of things I'd like to do. We'll just have to, but right now I've got two of these running. I'd like to finish at least one before we would do something else.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Finish this stuff up before, Moving on.
I think if I ran five Kickstarters, the fans would start to say, yeah, well, you know, haven't given me the first one yet, so maybe I'll wait, and then people won't back it. So we want to create a quality product, too. I mean, that's the biggest thing there.
Right. Sparkle Glitch asks, you've dabbled in doing some manga stuff before. You sort of did that print-on-demand thing with Tokyo Pop for, mm-hmm. for a bit. Right. Have you ever considered just full-on becoming a publisher?
Really, probably not. I mean, at least right now, that's not really on our radar. I mean, although we do, we just did a deal with Noir Caesar to put out their Johnny O'Brien's manga. So we'll have those on our website through our program. I don't really have a plan at the moment to become a manga publisher. That's a whole different animal in terms of licensing and so on than the video side is. But I'm not going to rule it out forever. So, I mean, anything's possible. It's just not on the plan radar right now.
Right. Okay. Okay, I think this is actually our last question, but someone asked if it's how tough it is to license Animax dubs for things, which exist in some cases, I think.
Well, I mean, I want to remind everyone who owns Animax.
Right.
That would be Sony.
Right. don't they own another publisher? It's...
Well, but see, that's a whole different division of Sony.
Yeah, right.
There's many arms to the Hydra that is Sony.
Right.
We have not had a whole lot of success with that. Keep in mind that a lot of those were made inexpensively and just shown on their streaming channel. So they didn't get a video release anywhere. It's not that I wouldn't, try, but in the past I've not had a lot of receptiveness to, the possibility, or a lot of interest. We can certainly continue to try, I think I'd rather dub the shows myself with a Kickstarter. The Animax dubs are kind of varying quality, so.
Yep, that is definitely. I feel like that is the sort of common feeling about that sort of thing.
It's a tough call. I mean, back in the boom era, there was a lot of people that were outsourcing dubs out of the country, and they had varying quality. And Animax does a lot of stuff, but they were done in Singapore, or they were done in Malaysia, or some of these other places where. Honestly, sometimes I wonder if they're just using graduate students or something or listening to their stuff. But, you also have to look at where they're marketing their product to. It was what they wanted to do.
Right. Okay. All right. I think that is the last of our Twitter questions, and I think that wraps us up. Thanks a lot for coming by to chat. It was great. I guess the next big thing around the corner is Black Friday, right? Like, that's the big...
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to come back and tell everybody they need to buy stuff. I mean, that's kind of fun. Christmas is coming, our hope is obviously to put together something that makes things compelling for people. But, I mean, I always love the Christmas season. It's fun to watch the fans and their response and their excitement about things. So that is the next big thing for us, short of, I need to get my Kickstarter funded. So please fund my Kickstarter.
Right. So as you're hearing this today, as the folks listening to this are hearing it, it's Friday. This thing has about 19 days left. You still have time to go over and get in on it if you want to be part of the crew that put it together. Thanks a lot, Sean. Good luck, man. I think you're going to be fine now. Seems like things are going great.
Well, it's encouraging and exciting to work with the fans on these kind of projects. This has been a lot of fun, and that's why we wanted to do another one. We just had such a ball on the first one. So I do appreciate you taking the time and inviting me on the show, Zach. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, man. Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Sean for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments, reviews, those things. It helps. And we will probably see you in 2 weeks. Preview guides next week. Check out the fall 2018.